Hey, everybody, welcome back here on our next episode on our podcast / fireside chat with our next guest, Miss Tabitha Farmer, who I was very, very fortunate enough to meet through Major John Turnbull about 6 or 8 months ago. We got in contact about the Disney half marathon, and we actually talked on Father's Day. Remember, you gave me a call on Father's Day, and we had a super long conversation about the Disney half and how you support the Special Forces Foundation, and ever since then it's been awesome. And was it a month ago?
Yeah, it was a month ago.
We went and ran the Disney half marathon, which is awesome. Got to meet a bunch of people down there and kind of created an unofficial running group / club. So that's super awesome. And just so everybody knows, like for people that are listening in, Miss Tabitha Farmer here. So Tabitha Farmer is a mother of four wonderful kids. She's a Gold Star spouse. Her husband, Chief Warrant Officer 2 John Farmer, was killed on January 16th in 2019 in Syria in the same blast that wounded Major John Turnbull as well. And killed three other individuals that were there, Miss Shannon Kent, Scotty Wirtz, and then Miss Goodyear, which we'll dive into a lot of that's there. But Tabitha, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
This has been I don't want to say a long time coming, but it's been good. I'm excited. Yeah. So it should be a good time.
Thank you. And there's also three injured. There were two other injured along with Turnbull. So
they're still active. They are
out of the military, but still doing stuff.
So. Yeah. Okay. That's what I thought. Okay. So, but if people want to know more, they should read the book, right? I guess.
Yes.
That you mentioned that in 0% chance. We'll throw that plug in there for John.
Okay. Sounds good. Right.
But yeah, if you could, you want to kick it off and tell us a little bit about you, where you grew up and everything?
Where I grew up? I grew up in Port St. Lucie, Florida, and, I was just a normal kid. Actually not really normal. My parents had me on stage since I was potty trained. Literally, I had to be potty trained to be on stage. So I grew up in the theater doing things with them. I was a cheerleader. I started volleyball at my high school. I was on the first girls' golf team. I made sure we started the golf team because I played with the boys for a year and I never got to go out. I was always the alternate and never got to actually play. And so the next year I was like, how do we get a girls' golf team? And now they're pretty phenomenal. So go LPA Greyhounds. Yay. But then I went to UCF. And had a great time there. I was a sorority girl. I was the ever famous sorority girl. And I lived in a wonderful bubble of everybody just needs a hug. That's why the world's not, you know, having a problem. And then my best friend in high school, Carl, he kept telling me I needed to meet this guy. He's like, you need to meet my cousin. And I was like, I love you, but not like that. No, I'm not going to meet your cousin. Like, okay. And then I got to meet his cousin, and it was my heart literally went ka-dunk the first time I saw John, and I was smitten from there on. And it was absolutely amazing. And I flirted with him for a good 3 years, but John also flirted with me, but never. And we talked about all the things we weren't supposed to talk about, abortion, politics, all the things that you're not supposed to talk about to people. We disagreed on everything. Which was great. And we talked to the sun would come up, but it would just be the two of us. And I was like, I really thought he was gay. I was like, I've done everything I possibly can besides throw myself at this guy. And then finally Carl called me up and was like, hey, so my cousin, he's like, I'm engaged. And then he's like, so my cousin wants your phone number for some reason. And I was like, whoa. John wants my number. You call him. You hang up with me. You call him and you give him my number. Actually, let me have his number. So in case he calls me, I answer the phone. And Carl was like, you like him? And I was like, did you see your cousin? John was, when he joined the military, he was 6'7", just all muscle, all, he was huge. He was a beast. And so, yeah, he was just awesome. But
were you guys dating? Were you guys dating when he joined?
No, I actually tried talking him out of it.
Oh, okay, okay. When was this? Like 2006, 2007?
We got married in 2007, so it was like 2003 him and I actually got to meet. And okay. His older brother went to West Point, and he was like, you know, he got the army bug. He was like, I really should join. And he was going to Bowdoin College at the time, and he was captain of his basketball team, which I found out after he died, and his parents found out after he died that he was captain of his college basketball team, because he was a quiet professional through and through. He was always about being a member of the team, not about himself, which was just himself. But so we dated. He called me, and then, the man ghosted me for a whole week. It was hilarious. And then I called him. I actually text messaged him and was like, I don't know what your problem is, but I'm deleting your phone number. And within 30 seconds, he's like, I need you to come up. He's like, I don't know how to get you up here. He was going through the course, and he was going through the language school. Okay. So I got schnuckered thinking that he had like a 9-to-4 job. Yeah. And he also said that Special Forces only deploys like for 4 months out of the year. And I was like, oh, that's not so bad. All lies. So we started talking. It was August 13th. I went to visit him. We were engaged on May 5th and married in July. So once we finally started dating, it went very fast. And once he was deploying, he deployed in October. I was pregnant with our oldest daughter.
So when did he graduate?
March 2007.
Okay, and then you guys went to Tennessee from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we never had to move.
Yeah, so that was the thing, right? Yeah, so, yeah, so, wow, okay, so, yeah. Then you guys went down to Tennessee, and you were there, and then he took off almost right away then. That was during the height of when everything was hopping and popping.
Oh, yeah, yeah, he got hurt, he got injured right away, too. They were, he bit off half of his tongue, he broke his jaw and a couple of his sternum and his ribs, because his sister team was being attacked, and they were going, and then they hit a gully or something, and the 50 caliber went into his jaw. So that happened right off the bat, and they tried to give him up for a Purple Heart, and he was like, no, this is the stupidest. He's like, I deny the Purple Heart. He's like, this is the stupidest thing. He's like, no, don't put me in that for that. Take the paperwork back. He was like, he felt dumb. So, he bit off half of his tongue, and he calls me up, and I'm pregnant, first deployment, like terrified, newlywed. And he's like, hey, hey, and he couldn't talk. He was all drugged up, and he had like stitches all around. Yeah, that was fun. That was terrifying. But yeah, he got upset because they sent him to do paperwork stuff, and like the team got to do cool guy stuff.
How long was that deployment, the first one?
That was, because he made it back October, 7 months long.
So right before you had...
Oh, no, he came home 2 weeks. He came home, I had Betsy 2 weeks early, and he came home literally 5 days before she was born.
Yeah.
But yeah, but they were really great on making sure. That's something about fifth group, is they're really on top of making sure that guys have family time and that they're there for the births.
That's the one thing I'll say I've always appreciated about the special operations community, is that they will, I don't want to say force. All right, I'll say force. Even if you don't want to, you better have a really good reason of why they're not going to force you to go home to be part of these big events, where it's not like that everywhere else in the military. And if guys like need to take a knee, as much as everybody wants to go and not be out of it, you may not like it at the time, but they're going to make you do it, and it's going to be for the betterment. So I'm like, it's good that he got to be able to come home for that.
You know? He was home for all the births. It was awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he was. That's something I have to say about being Special Forces in the Special Forces group. They were definitely always on top of it. So that's something I'm grateful for, because I've heard the horror stories, and I've seen the pictures of the guys, like, you know, FaceTiming with the birds, and I was like, oh my gosh. I was like, I didn't have to do any of that. Like, thank heavens. So I was, we were blessed. And I think, you know, God has his reasons for everything. And so I think we had a little bit of God winks early on because we needed them. So yeah, no, we're grateful. So
how long was he home for before he left again?
He came home in May and deployed that next January.
Yeah, so
because I was pregnant again. I was pregnant with our oldest son, Devin. and he was about to deploy, and I took the pregnancy test, and he thought that I saw like a spider or something because I screamed so loud. So yeah, and then like within 3 days he deployed again. So that was, but then he came back again right before, but I think that one was 7 months long because he was home for like a good month before Devin, because I had to have Devin in Tennessee and okay. Betsy, because John and I are both Floridians. So Betsy's a second generation Floridian born. And go. I was like, can we just drive to like the, can we just
the
drive?
Border? Let's just go. Border.
I was like, we'll just drive. I'll just deliver him at the border. I'll be fine. But I remember being very upset that he was actually coming home early. I was like, you're coming. I was like, can't you like make it so that I have to stay and then you have to come to Florida? No. So, but yeah, that he was home for that one too. And then the twins were a shock.
Because there's an age gap, isn't there, between Devin and them?
Yeah, about 8 years. Yeah. Yeah, we had just the four of us, and then John was like, I really want to try for a third. I wanted to try, and I was like, no, let's not. And I actually had just had a miscarriage about a year before that, so I was still trying to like be okay in the head with that, and I was like, no, we're good. And I got sick and had to take a Z-Pak. You know how they say to have a backup if you take a Z-Pak? They're not lying. I have twins to prove it. So, and I was actually, he was deploying again, and I was doing the Princess Half Marathon, which I've done almost all of them, except for the second one. But I'm a perfect challenge person. But I was doing that with my cousin, and I was like, oh, by the way, I might be pregnant in case, because she's a nurse. I was like, in case I end up like in one of the health tents or something, just so you know, like that might be a possibility. And she's like, what? And then the race started. I was like, bye. Because I took a test before I left for Florida, but it didn't say anything. And I was like, I swear I'm pregnant. Like, I just knew I was pregnant. And then I came back and it was positive. So
it was funny. Now what do you do though? Hands are full.
Oh, yeah, it was a lot.
what was life like for you guys, like just having your two and like for that 8 year gap? And I'm sure he was, I mean, you can go into if you want, but I'm sure he was super busy in between that time, but
yeah,
it was really good.
We counted our blessings a lot. He was gone more than he was home. And actually we loved coming to Florida because he was actually home with us. Like he would be here with us and doing stuff with us instead of like in Tennessee, he would still be training and gone for days at a time, even though he was home. So actually having leave, it was the best coming here. And that's the most time we saw him.
But that's what I always try and tell people too, and especially new families, when they hear what you've heard, when they heard what my wife heard, like, oh, deployments are only like 4 to 6 months, it's fine, then you're home, and you're like, you know, they're, no. Yeah, and then what you don't count is all the time before that. So, you know, like, oh, yeah, I'm only going to the field. Hey, field's really short. Okay, but don't forget about, you know, the TDYs. And I'm not saying it's all bad because it's not. It's just, you know, it comes at a cost.
Yeah, it does. And there was a time John and I figured it out. It was right before the twins because I was an understanding wife. But then I did turn into that crazy wife one time because he was not home at all. He deployed, came home, and then they decided to go on a JSET. Yeah, that sounds fun. And then he went through level 3 training on top of that. And we figured out that he was home for 7 days, not consecutively, out of a whole year. And I remember he was like, oh, I'm going to go to level 3 training. And I was like, oh, you're going to go again? And I remember picking up his tough box and throwing it out the door. And I was like, let me help you pack. Here you go. Go again. See you later. And that's when we both realized that we needed to regroup and figure out what was best for our family. Because he was like, okay, maybe I should take a step back. And when I got pregnant with the twins, he actually took the S3 job so that he could be home. It was the first time he'd ever been home for the whole entire pregnancy. So we got to see the crazy wife. My dad was like, oh, you're gonna be home the whole time? You deal with her? Really? The whole time? But yeah, so he finally got to see what the ups and downs of a pregnant woman. And people kept asking, they're like, what'd you do wrong? Did you get a DUI? Like, why are you the S3 guy? Because he was so good at everything that they were like, how did you mess up? He was like, no, I just need to be home for my wife. I need to be home. And then after the twins were born, he deployed, and he told me he was deploying his S3 job. I found out after he died, the man lied to me and deployed as a fox on 5325 because they were naming his teams. And I was like, no, we were in two teams. I was like, we were 5321 and 5311. What is this 25? Yeah, he lied. And thank God the man's dead because I'd kill him. But it's okay. It's fine. It was way after the twins were born. But he went and he did that actually wasn't that long of a deployment. I think it was 5 or 6 months because they needed a fox. And so he did that and then he became a warrant.
That's how you know you've been through the ringer when you say 5 to 6 months isn't long. You know what I mean? Or you get to the point where things may or may not come up, right? And you come home and you tell them and they're like, okay, you just let me know when you're actually going to go.
Yeah. No. And then the worst part about when he died was I finally turned into that wife that was just like, okay, this is our life. He comes, he goes, it's fine. And I finally took it and was like, I can do this. And then also the fact that he was an officer, I didn't realize. I know it says it in his title, chief warrant officer. He had to explain it to me. He's like, I'm an officer now. You're an officer's wife. I was like, I'm a what? I'm a what now? I was like, oh, okay, this is who we are, how we're doing it. And then he was killed. I was like, really? I finally understood it all. I was finally in it. To and not give him a hard time about deploying and leaving all the time. And yeah, so it was a really crappy part. I was so annoyed. I was like, really?
When he decided to go the warrant route, did you guys move up to North Carolina with him or just?
No, because with Special Forces, they have it. So it's just shy of 6 months.
Yeah, so you can do a turn and burn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So he would come back on weekends or we would go there. So I drove all 4 kids to North Carolina. I actually drove in a Category 2 Hurricane Matthew. I drove through that to see him. That was fun. It was not supposed to be a Category 2. It was supposed to be a tropical storm by the time I thought that I was going to be driving through it. And no, it was still a 2.
Did you have the typical deployment experiences where every time he left, something would happen? And I asked that because when you bring up Hurricane Matthew, I was deployed during that and everything was going wrong on top of the hurricane.
Oh, no, not one thing, 3 things. It's 3. There's always 3 things that go wrong. One time John was literally in the car and I went into her closet to get something out really fast. And as I was closing it, all of the shells fell, all of them. Just, and it's like a nice walk-in closet. And I was like, that did not just happen. I opened the door and I couldn't get, and I was like, oh no. Okay. I was like, this is the first one. I was like, he just left the house. Like he's not even in the road yet. He just walked out. Yeah, there's always three. Every single time.
when he got ready to go, I mean, did he deploy after he came back from the course at Bragg and then went back down to Campbell?
As a warrant? Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he went to Syria, actually around the same timeline that he went the next year. So he left November 27th, I think. It was right after Thanksgiving, like 2 or 3 days after Thanksgiving in 2017. And then they came back around March 14th, 2018. And then he deployed again, November 27th to Syria again. And then he died in January.
How is it, when you look back on it after like all the deployments and everything, if there's anything you would do different to prepare, like what would you do? Like, and this is all before him, you know, before him getting killed, but like looking back now, if you had to relive this whole thing and all these deployments coming, is there anything different you would have done to prepare for that?
I would have tried to be more understanding that he literally had no control over when he deployed. But to just be more understanding wife, honestly, because I signed up for this too. I knew what I was getting, like, I was snuckered, but but I chose to stay in. Like, we could have gotten out. Because when he told me, he's like, I'm doing my 2-year team time, and then we're getting out. And that did not happen. We just kept redeploying or re-enlisting, and it was our decision. It was not just his decision. Because he could have done anything. He was a stockbroker beforehand and was doing a good job at it. But he decided, you know what? I don't want to be in the office anymore. And he was not an office guy. Like, he was somebody who loved outdoors. He loved doing things and helping people. And he actually became an 18 X-ray because of that. So, but yeah, I would have just been more understanding of him earlier on. So, and been more involved with FRG, which I was always the point of contact and stuff, but, those ladies have been just absolutely amazing, and they're phenomenal in every single way, because we're all dealing with the weight of the world on our shoulders, and to have them even before he died was just phenomenal. So yeah, just be more understanding and be more involved.
I guess diving into this, the last deployment to Syria, is there anything you guys did different to prep for this deployment coming up?
I actually watched him pack, which was weird. I never usually watched him pack. It was like something we would always, and I talked to other couples, like, you guys we would start fighting to like push each other away. Like, just stupid little fights, like things that you never get upset about. And I never like watched him pack before, because I was like just angry at the fact that he was leaving sometimes. But this time I was really involved with him packing, and it was a process together. Then we did it together, and I swear it was God's way of like making me at ease later on. because I remember all the things that he put in, which we did not get back. We got hardly anything back of his. And I found out later that his things were supposed to be kept for 6 months, and they were not. They were most everything was destroyed. Not even, and I understand like the stuff that he was wearing, but I could have gotten that back. Legally, I was supposed to get that back. Even his bloody clothes and stuff, I was supposed to get all that back. But even like his stuff in his room, his sheets, we didn't get his sheets back. We didn't get expensive headphones back. We didn't get a ton back. Like, it was my boudoir book. So someone's out there, I'm very proud of my boudoir book. It's very tasteful. It's done very tastefully. but yeah, that's gone. All of our love, like, cause the kids would always send him like love things and stuff. I watched everything, and I was more involved with it, which was weird. But yeah, so that's, I guess, the only thing.
Is there anything you did different with the kids? I only ask because I remember we were in Florida and when we were talking, you guys, you had like, you know, stories read and different things. Was that stuff you did before that deployment or?
Yeah, we have. He would always we would video him reading to the kids, like their favorite story, which was Just Like Daddy. So we did that, and we always did family pictures with their Christmas tree because he always deployed around Christmas. Worst Christmas ever. He was gone more Christmases than home, which was weird. But we always like would take family pictures and individual pictures with Daddy. So that was the
Did you
thing.
guys, when he took off, did you guys get an opportunity to talk a lot on this on this deployment or?
All the time. No, John was definitely like I talked to other wives, and I was as the point of contact. The wives would be like, "Hey, have you heard from them at all?" And I was that wife that was like, John would be like, "Ding, ding, ding, ding" on signal, and I was like, "Yeah, I think they're fine. I think they're where they need to be." And then I would call John and be like, "You told your daughter, called his wife, like he just wants to know that you're safe." And he was constant. He would wake up early or go to sleep late to help the kids with their homework because I'm not good at math or Spanish or lots of things, and he was phenomenal at it. And so he would literally stay up or text with the kids helping homework. He was talk to us every night, would wake us up every morning, which is how I knew something was wrong the day of it, because he would always text message me, "Good morning, beautiful. It's time to get up. You gotta go." Yeah, the morning of it, there was nothing. So I knew something was wrong when that didn't come through.
You want to dive into that?
Okay, so at 4:52 a.m., it sounded like a bomb went off in the house, and I actually got a weapon and I cleared it, and I was trying to clear our house, like John told me. And now thinking back about it, I know he was laughing about it because I did not know what I was doing. But it was to the point that I knew something was wrong, that I went to the kids and like the mother, I poked them to make sure they were breathing, because I went up and I was like, they were so still that I couldn't tell if they were breathing or not. And I poked each one of them, and they were breathing. Everything was fine, but it was too early for John to like actually send me a message. But I checked my phone. There was nothing but the, good night, love you message. And then I went to sleep like I hadn't, like before kids sleep. It was such a nice, amazing, deep sleep. And I say, I'm like, I think God just let me have sleep for the last time, because I did not sleep for a good year after that day. But we woke up and I slept through all of our alarms because I was going to the 5th Group Commander's wife's house, to plan like a fun FRG event. And after I dropped off the kids late, which was pretty regular, we're pulling in on two wheels, that was us. The team sergeant's wife text messaged me and was like, "Have you seen Siri Maps this morning?" And I was like, "Why would I be looking at Siri Maps? We're not supposed to look at Siri Maps, because Siri Maps turns us normal wives into crazy wives. We're not supposed to do that." And she was like, "Something's happening." She's like, "A bomb went off, and there are 9 casualties so far, and there's Americans." And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And so, of course, I went home, sat on my stairs, and looked at Siri Maps over and over again, and then Googled "Man Bitch Syria," and I watched the video probably 50 times of my husband being blown up. And I just remember sitting there terrified, because I saw I you can tell it was either team sergeant or John, because they're both I could you can see John in the video, just because he was so tall. And but I was also in denial. I was like, "No, they're not saying it's a special forces team. It's not." And then all the wives started calling me because I was point of contact. And I was like, "Well, I'm going to the commander's wife's." I was like, "I'm going to the commander's house. All the wives are going to be there, like all the battalion officer wives." I was like, "Oh, if something's really going on with fifth group, if something happened, I'll know it there. Like, definitely. So I got there and it was normal. Like, everything was normal. Nothing, like, you wouldn't think that anything had happened. And honestly, I talked to them afterwards and they're like, we, honest to God, had no idea. Like, they didn't know. They didn't know it was a special forces team. They didn't know it was our guys. They didn't know. They knew something had happened, but they really had no idea it was anything to do with us. and I actually got a call from a fiance, and I was like, there's a call from a fiance about today. And I like looked at all the wives because I was actually trying to see if I could read anything on them. And they're like, oh, go outside and take it. And I talked her out, like talked her down. I was like, hey, yeah, I know right now we can't get a hold of them. I was like, if something happens like this, they go black and you don't hear from them for a couple of days until they get everything situated. I was like, just remember, no news is good news. It's a great thing. I was like, go to your car, freak the fuck out. Sorry, freak out. I was like, freak out, scream, do all the things you need to do, then get yourself together and just pray. And honestly, just, you'll be fine. It'll be great. It's, you know, I was like, then you're going to get a call and you're going to feel like an idiot for being so worried. And then I tried to take my own advice and do the same thing. And then I actually called Rear D because we had one of the guys from the team. He was retiring. And so he was like, okay, if there's anything, call me. So I called him and I was like, hey, so what's going on? And he had no idea what was going on either. But he was already following me. And he was the one that had to follow me all day long. And I felt like someone was following me all day. It was the strangest thing. And then I had to go. We had our babysitter, but she didn't drive yet because teenagers don't like to drive. I don't know why. But she was phenomenal with our kids, so we drove her everywhere. I went and picked her up early, and then she went to dance with my youngest. And I remember standing there watching Priscilla dancing, and just a wave of like warmth came over me, and just like on this side, and it was just the weirdest thing. And I felt tingles, and I felt like something was off. It was just, something was definitely off. I even emailed John in his work email, which I'd never done before. I only had it because he like sent me stuff from it. And I found this because I have widow's brain and I don't remember a whole lot from that day. But I remember I found it about a year afterwards, and I was like, oh, I sent this to him going, hey, just checking what's going on, because you usually call me or something when something like this happens. But then everything was around 6, no, it was 5:30. I was a Girl Scout leader at the time, and we were getting ready to leave, and I was actually walking to my front door to pick up my leader bag, and I saw the silhouettes outside, and I yelled at my babysitter to take all the kids upstairs. And I opened the door and just fell. I just fell. And I remember them telling me, they said the whole spiel that they're supposed to. And the gentleman who told me, his eyes were so blue and they were filled with such sorrow. And I remember just saying, he's just hurt. He's one of the hurt ones, right? He's just hurt. And I'm saying, no, he's gone. And everything was just a blur after that. But I remember the kids and trying to tell the kids that Daddy was with God and that he wasn't coming home. And that was the worst. And the twins had no idea what was going on because there were four. But they were crying because I was crying. And then Betsy and Devin just were in shock. And then all the wives came over that night, and we got John's most expensive bottle of whiskey out and drank the whole thing. which was good. Because it's something I know he would have wanted. Actually, no, he would have been like, really, you drink it that fast? But it was the worst day of my life. And I just remember always feeling like someone was there watching us. And now talking about how it all happened, it was so strategic. And I feel so bad for everybody that had to be involved. It was, they were so kind and so sweet. And my, I had Captain Mike be my CAO, and he was so young. And I was like, there's a boy that's going to be helping me. Like, he was just right out of West Point, and just so sweet and so kind. But yeah, it was, and the poor guy, he had to ask me if I wanted photographers at Dover within like an hour of being told that my husband was killed. He was like, can you sign this paperwork? And I was like, I'm not signing anything. And he was like, well, I need to know if you want photographers or media at Dover. And I was like, you can stay here. But I was like, if you ask me one more time, I'm going to ask you to leave and never come back. And the poor guy, he just like sat there, was like, okay, I don't know what to do. which is something that we've tried. I think it's finally changed. I was like, don't ask the widows to sign anything the day of at all. Like, nothing needs to be, that's something that can be changed, that can be figured out at Dover. It's not something that needs to happen. And I've actually tried including it into the packet, because there's so many, like the pre-deployment packet, there's so many questions that I was asked that I have no idea. Like, I still have no idea. I lost sleep over if John wanted to have a wooden coffin or a steel coffin. I still don't know. And I lost sleep over it for a whole month, because I don't know if I chose wisely or poorly, but that's something, there were so many questions. So I've worked on redoing the packet, and also media, because I was married to a Green Beret. The OPSEC says no. Like, everything was no media, no nothing. People actually thought that John and I were divorced because I never had his picture and I never mentioned him. I never said his name. I would say my hubby if I mentioned him on Facebook or anything, but I never had his picture. He would approve the pictures, and they would usually be with a hat on, with glasses, or the back of his head when he would come home from deployments. That's how people knew that he came home from deployments, was I would have a picture of the kids hugging him and just the back of his head. But so when they asked about media, I was like, absolutely no. Like, John would say no about that. he wouldn't want media. And I really wish I had done the media, just because the people, like the guys in Syria, were waiting to see John be taken off the plane, and they never got to see that. And these are things that I never was explained. Like, they didn't explain that to me. They didn't say, hey, we'll just have him. But they kept telling me that they couldn't keep the media off of the kids. They're like, you have four children here. The media is going to eat this up. And I didn't want ISIS to see that they got a good guy. I didn't want them to see my kids' faces or us crying. I was like, no, they're not going to get that from me. But yeah, so there's a lot that's happened. Sorry, I went off on a tangent.
No, you're good. Like, that's what, you know, so after you guys got notified and you started going through that process, what kind of like really started changing for you then? I mean, obviously, like, now you're by yourself now, you know, I don't want to say the army becomes like a distant memory, right? But like,
well, I'm really more involved with things now.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, as you're going through that process though, and then like when you got him back, did you decide to have him at Arlington, to bury him at Arlington? Or?
John decided that. So as when he went through the Special Forces Warrant Officer course, one of the things that they do is they go visit all the warrant officers that are buried in Arlington, and they go over their bio and they talk about them, and family members are invited to talk about them. And that was one of the most poignant pieces of that course. And he came home and he told me, he's like, if I'm killed in action, I want to be in Arlington with my brothers. He's like, if I die from like cancer or something else, we're going to be in the Veterans Memorial in Florida with your grandparents and your parents. and that's what he told me. And that's, so he chose Arlington. And that's why he's there, is because he was killed in action and he wanted to be with his brothers in arms. And there's a lot of guys, there's a lot of walking. So I've been very honored to be part of the Warrant Officer Family Group. And so I've walked it with the course a couple times. And every time it's still overwhelming at how many, just not even warrant officers, but special forces guys we have in Section 60 alone. But it's hallowed ground, even though they drive me crazy. Getting in there, communication is horrible. There's a lot that needs to be fixed with Arlington. And it's little steps. It's been 6 years and I'm hoping that they've changed their ways. But I know a Medal of Honor recipient, her husband Ron was, he died of cancer and he's in Section 60, just a row up from John. And her and I got to meet them before Ron died of cancer. And then once he passed, I became even closer to her, just, you know, dark witter humor, like in Special Forces, we had dark humor. And then as Special Forces widows, it's even worse. Like we're just, it's, yeah. But I told her, I was like, hey, communications might be a little difficult. I'm really hoping, because he's a Medal of Honor recipient, that it's better for you. And she had some issues too. She was like, what the heck? And she's like, and he was middle, she's like, and he wasn't better than everybody, but like they hold him at a higher honor. And it's hard getting in there. It's hard talking to them and figuring out everything. So it's been a battle with that.
Did you end up staying in the Tennessee area all the way through until his burial and then leaving after, or?
Oh, we stayed for a long time. So Betsy, we were, the school that they went to, they'd been there since preschool and we're Roman Catholic. And so Betsy really, she was about to go into eighth grade and she asked to stay through eighth grade year to go through confirmation with the kids that she's known and graduate eighth grade. 'Cause it was a huge deal. She's been there forever. And so I thought that was a good ask. I was like, that's because it wasn't just me. I wanted the kids to have some input on where we live, what we do. So then we tried to move to Florida, but the school that we wanted to go to, which is actually John's alma mater, they were at John's funeral and were like, hey, we really want to honor John's memory and we would love for your four kids to come to the school. And at the time, I didn't even think that was an option because it's a phenomenal school. We cannot afford it. I was still in the depths of like, how am I going to pay anything? But then I found out there's a whole lot of scholarships for kids. So luckily we are in scholarships, but the school during 2020, everybody moved to Florida. The school got full. And so for Betsy's ninth grade year, we tried to get her in and they weren't able to get her in because it was at capacity. So we stayed in Tennessee for another year. And then for her 10th grade year last year, they were able to get her and Devin in to the school. So, and then my twins are actually going to my alma mater, my elementary alma mater, which was great. But we're still trying to find a house in Florida. We're trying to relocate permanently, which has been a battle. But we're going to figure it out somehow.
Yeah, and I mean, it getting to talk to you a lot, like, down in Florida, like, the process seems to be, I don't want to say difficult, right? But there's a lot of it's not as streamlined as I thought it was when we got to sit down and talk. So I guess to kind of bring this up just to think about it. But so after John was buried and you guys, when did you start working through like that whole process? I mean, what were you brought up to with like his pay, you know, even though he was a chief warrant officer too, because he didn't serve at that grade plate for 3 years, like he was reduced back to his enlisted rank.
And that's E7.
And that's what you're getting paid at.
Yeah, 55% of that we get. Yeah, we don't get 100%. And actually, another friend of mine brought up the fact that divorced wives make more than we do, because if you're married for 10 years and you divorce, excuse me, the spouse is eligible to receive a portion of your retirement, and they do, and they actually make more than the surviving families, which is, even if they cheated and it's their fault, the system is broken and flawed, and every day I'm learning new flaws and obstacles, and it's not simple. But so many Gold Stars and surviving families have just rolled over and given up about it because we're like, I guess this is how it is. We're just gonna take it. But I'm not. I keep pushing doors and making waves and asking questions, which is probably why it's a good reason I did not join the military, because I don't think I would have done well. just because it's mind numbing, honestly. I'm so annoyed. And they've just, because it's how they've always done it with like the pay, like the CW2 pay, they were like, yep, it's the high three. E7 was his high three. And I was like, what? But we're finally paying the bills. We finally weren't living deployment to deployment. Because that's when you could pay off the bills, was during deployments, was, and that's, so it's frustrating that he was a CW2. And actually the DOD said that he became a CW2 post, what's it? I can never say it, but after death, that he was, and I was like, no, I pinned him. I have pictures. We got Chick-fil-A and coffee. Like we had a whole party, and it's an automatic thing from when you graduate, that's automatically 2 years after your graduation that you come up CW2. And he died in 2019, and he graduated from the course November 23rd of 2016. So it was 2018, and then he deployed again. So that was frustrating.
How did you, and I guess I'm going to back up just a little bit just to tie this into, as you were going through the process, like starting your healing, right, figuring out these pay things, figuring out like what are we gonna do, what that life looks like. How was like the beginning stages of that healing process, and did you want to talk to people that were there? Did you not want to talk to people that were there? And I guess as you go through that, because the back part of this question is gonna be like, how did you meet Turnbull and how did you start getting involved with them? Which I think it is honestly incredible, because I don't want to say it's lost on people, because it's not, but you know, a lot of the Gold Star families I've met, like you stay close, and then sometimes people drift, and especially those people that were around during those times, like you don't always connect and become so close. And what was awesome in January was seeing like you, the Wurtzes, and you know, Turnbull, like how close you guys all are. And it was something that I've honestly just not seen throughout my career. You know,
well, it's because we're different. We're all different. Well, also, like, so for me, I wanted to know every single thing that happened that day. I wanted to know leading up to it. I wanted to know everything. So it's like a big puzzle in my head, and I won't be able to die peacefully until I know the puzzle's put together. And so it's a constant putting little tiny pieces together and just learning more about it. Whereas I've talked to other Gold Stars and surviving families, and they're like, we don't want to know anything. I know one widow who hasn't opened anything. They brought in all of their stuff, and she's like, and it just sits there. She's like, I'm never opening it. She was given a brief. She was given her brief, and she's like, I don't want it. Please don't tell me anything. I don't want to know anything. Whereas me, I still have questions. I've still asked my poor CAOs. I've gone through 5 of them, not because I'm a horrible person or because they weren't doing a good job. I've had 5 phenomenal CAOs. it's because they had to continue doing stuff in their job. My first one, he had the audacity to get married. And he was also supposed to be leaving and going to another place. So we knew that he wasn't going to be my CAO forever. And he was great. He went through everything through the funeral, because we had the funeral down in Florida. And then he went through the internment in D.C. And then I had a second one who was a captain of an active ODA, which I felt bad calling him about stuff. And because he's a captain of a team, as a team wife, you don't want to take away from team. You don't take away from team time. You don't do that. So it was really hard for me to call him and be like, hey, so what is this now? What are we doing with this? And he did a great job too. But then again, he had to move also because the captains only stay for like 2 years on the team. And then he moved away, and it was almost close to his time. And then I got 3 more just to keep constantly like trying to do stuff. But for me, I wanted to know everything. And Turnbull and another soldier who his initials are DC. I'll just say DC.
Yeah.
He, they both came to John's internment at Arlington, and I made sure that the team was able to be at John's internment at Arlington. I met General Thomas at my Gold Star ceremony, which was literally minutes before John's funeral. And he was like, what can I do for you? And I was like, I want John's team home. I want them home during the middle of a deployment. They need to bury my husband. I want them home. And the team was already working on it on the back end. They had to go to the Pentagon in the middle of a deployment. Somehow, just worked out that way. Just the whole team had to go. but it worked out. And so I met Turnbull and DC at John's internment, and it was at Arlington, and it was so amazing because I hadn't known, they never told me the extent of the other guys, of how badly they were burned or what was going on. One was a teen guy, and his wife was so sweet. She came over the night of John being killed, and I was like, how's your husband? And she's like, he's okay. And then I thought I was crazy because I was like, wait, that's, she's the wife. I was like, did I get the name wrong of who was hurt? Does she not know he was hurt? Because she was so kind and so sweet and more worried about me than anything else. But we've stayed connected. We're the misfits. And so it's something that we've always been really good at. But yeah, Turnbull has been really good at trying to stay in touch as well. And, you know, naming his son after my husband helps. And then Sandy and Dave Wirtz. So Dave is Scotty's biological dad, and Sandy is her biological mom. And then Fran is married to Dave now. We've always called each other on the anniversary. We call each other on the birthdays. We always try to stay in contact because it's really meaningful. And then like Scotty's best friend, he's, you know, friends with me on Facebook. It's really sweet. And then Joe Kent actually taught John level 2 because he was a 5th group soldier with John, which is small world. And when Joe was in Africa, he actually had a 5th group soldier tell him about Shannon. So it's just, it's a small world. And especially being in soft community, it's just, it gets smaller. So we've just always tried to do stuff for each other. And I know if John had survived and not had any injuries, or even if he had, I know he would have wanted to be in Turnbull's life and the other guys' lives too, that were hurt or injured, and just try to make everything better. Because I think I need Turnbull as much as he needs me sometimes. And especially because I don't want him, I know he's had a lot of survivor grief, and it's hard. And he's talked to me about that sometimes too, because it's not easy. And I'm like, you're here for a reason. You know, it's, you know, John had 9 lives. He used his up somehow. But it's amazing. It's really healing being with him. And it's awesome for the kids to be around him too, because they see the extent of the damage that Turnbull had to deal with. And so they understand now why Daddy's not here sometimes, because I was like, Daddy was right next to the bomber. Because he came up, he stood in between Shannon and John. And so it's been good. I also, when joking around with Turnbull, it's fun running races with him, because I was like, you know, if you make me mad, I'm going to run you into a tree.
So, or we run him into other people.
Or other people. You did that. I did not do that. That was not me. For the record, he did not fall with me at all.
It is incredible to see it. And I, until I got to start talking to you guys, I didn't know the extent either. So the day of the attack, I was in Green to Gold at the time. And I had talked to Turnbull, I had talked to him, you know, before that, but a year before that, I was trying to get a job where he was at and actually deploy with him. So I actually still have the message when he was like trying to work the drug deal. I remember getting up, getting ready to go work out, and I got a message from one of the guys that we were in the Q course with, and he said, "Hey man, did you hear about Turnbull?" And I was like, "No." And then my phone just started blowing up, you know, very similar to, you know, what you experienced, right? The community is small, and it was like just everybody was wondering what was going on. And, you know, I know we talked about it too while we were down there, and like what we're trying to do here, like what like that physical, mental, emotional, like spiritual resilience like brings to people. But especially like the spiritual aspect, when you look at, for some people, like they say, hey, do things happen for a certain reason? Is it a coincidence? Are things not a coincidence? And you don't always get to understand like why they happen, but like getting to see Turnbull interact with you guys and like his purpose now, and then the things that you're doing and how well you guys are all connected, doesn't take away that pain, but maybe it's part of like a greater, you know, a greater plan.
Yeah, you know? No, it's, well, after, at the Fisher House, so I don't know if you know, when they come in from Dover, all the families are at the Fisher. It's this ginormous Fisher House in Dover. And John's best friend, so they actually, he's still active. He's a doctor now, but I don't know if I can say his name. Anyways,
we'll call him Doc.
He's a real doctor. He actually became a doctor through everything, but him and John were together off of the bus. Like they got off the planes, they got on the white bus together to go to Benning, to go to like basic training together, and they had to sit next to each other. And he's been a rock through everything. And then he actually escorted John's body back to Florida for us, and it was really awesome. I forgot why I was going. Where was I going with this? I was saying something, but there was something I was saying. Oh gosh! But I was trying to explain who he was in our lives. What was I saying with this? Sugar Snapples. No, I feel stupid.
You're fine.
I have no idea where I was going with Turnbull or with him. Oh. at the Fisher House. So, we call him Big Devin because our son Devin is named after him. He was with Devin and Betsy, and then my sister was with the twins, and they both asked completely opposite sides of the Fisher House why Daddy died, and both of them, without me knowing, without talking to each other, they were both like, God needed a warrior, and so he asked for the best, and that's why Daddy's gone, is because God needed a warrior. And they both came up to me. My sister came up and was like, hey, I hope I didn't overstep, but this is what I told the twins. And I was like, that's beautiful. Like, that's what I see. Because John was so faithful, and we always put God first, then each other, and then our kids. And that was our, how we managed, how we survived, I guess. And then Big Devin came over and was like, I hope you don't mind, but I told the kids that God needed a warrior, and that's why he picked the best one. And I just, every time I get frustrated, I know there's so many survivors and gold stars that steer away from the church and are mad at God. I'm not happy with them. I wish John was still here every single day, but he also made me promise before he deployed every time to never hold anger in my heart if something happened to him, and to always keep living. And so that's saved me on so many times, because it's so easy to get angry. It's so easy to be upset about it. I don't even hold anger in my heart for the ISIS suicide bomber, because he was doing what he thought was best for ISIS, which is not good, but he was a soldier just like John, and I'm not going to hold anger in my heart for him or them. They're not going to win. They don't win. I'm sorry. There's more to this world than what's going on, and honestly, we see little God winks all the time from John. It's weird. The kids even see it. It's like he was a huge music fan. And whenever I would get really stressed out, he would play Three Little Birds for me. And whenever I start like freaking out about something, Three Little Birds comes on. Doesn't matter if what channel it's on, because I'm a Pandora person. I know everyone else is something else, but I'm old school Pandora, because it was John's. Like, he picked all the genres out. But I have made sure that I don't have a thumbs up to that song on purpose. And it can be on my opera one, and Three Little Birds comes on. It could be on, you know, the Elvis station or Thumbprint station. It just comes on when I am at my worst. And it always reminds me, okay, there's something greater to this. And I know I'm a different person because of John, and I think about how our life would have been if he had survived, because it's totally different. I've never been quiet, but I was much quieter as his wife. I didn't stir the pot. I tried to make things go equally. You know, I tried to do things the right way for his career. Like, I never... But now I'm like, okay, what are you going to do? Demote my husband? I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to stir the pot. And I don't know if that's why I'm part of this. I don't know what's going on, but I know my kids, it's helped them. They had to grow up really fast, and I hate that. They're the ones that have suffered the most, because they're missing out on so much from him. But I know in the heart of hearts, John died doing exactly what he wanted to do. And he loved his job. He was defending our Constitution and defending our people. He wanted to make sure that the war stayed over there and didn't come over here for our children to have to fight on our soil. And that's the most important thing. So, but yeah, it's definitely something. And whenever I get upset, I just, you know, I do what the Army told John, was like, drink some water and go for a run. Like, literally, it's so annoying, but it works. You know, drink water, go for a run. It usually, the whatever problem it is usually a little bit better after said run. So, but yeah, it's hard. Cause he was so awesome. He really was. He was the best husband. We worked on it though, too. Like, we did not have the perfect marriage. It was always a work in progress. It was always a negotiating and talking and making sure, we were each other's main thing. So we always put each other on a pedestal and making sure that each other was, you know, because it's easy to have the kids go first, to put the kids before John, because they were always there around me. But without me being married to John, what did they have to look up to? And I still feel like John's still around, even though he's not. I hate being called a single mom, even though I am. But I have all of our thoughts and all the things that he wanted, how we wanted to raise the kids, our process on what we wanted them to experience. And that's why we're in Florida, because we both wanted them to experience grandparents. And both sets of grandparents are here. And so that's, yeah, sorry. Again, I went off on a tangent.
No, that's awesome. And I mean, you're living all those things out, and it's bleeding over. I mean, it has bled over into what you're doing now, right? Which is a lot of volunteering and a lot of giving back. And do you want to talk about what you do at the Special Forces Foundation? Or?
I'm the director of Gold Star and Surviving Families. So I help whenever a Gold Star needs assistance. We try to either help them ourselves, or the great thing I love about Special Forces Foundation is that we will find a way. If we can't help them, then we go out and we figure out who can, because there's so many different organizations out there that do have little niches and things. So if someone comes in and says, hey, I need this, if we can't assist them, then I go out and help it. We just had a spouse, her children were going to public school, and it was absolutely horrible. And she was like, is there any way that you guys can help us? And we were able to figure out financial assistance for her for the year. And it wasn't just us. Like, I called around, and it's really awesome helping give back, because I have no problem asking for another Gold Star surviving family. Like, hey, we need this. We need your help. Because the thing about, especially Special Forces wives, we don't like asking for help. So if we do ask for help, it's because we desperately need it. we will duct tape the heck out of something before we ask for assistance. So when they come to us, I know it's because it's a need, not a want. And I do love the fact that everybody's at Special Forces Foundation, volunteers are ours and time. I'm a volunteer. I'm not paid, because I'm actually not allowed to make more than $21,350 a year, because we get Social Security, which is really easy, you know, to live, to do with four kids. Oh, great. We do have one person that is paid. She is another Gold Star, but she does a ton of work. And she only gets paid $21,350. So I don't really know if that would be considered paying. But everybody has some skin in the game. Somehow or another, they are a Green Beret, or they married to a Green Beret. So they understand. And our active CEO has to be active within 3 years. So they're not completely like just no longer understanding what's going on, because things have changed even 6 years out. I don't know what's going on with what the need is for active Green Berets anymore, because we're not there. We don't see what's happening. And Green Berets don't like whining to Gold Stars. But the one thing I do love is that I have, so something that I love hearing about from John, from people talking to me about John, is I've had over, I stopped counting, as over 34 people have come up to me and told me that John, that they are on this earth because John took 5 minutes to talk to them for a day. And he saved so many people just by letting them vent, letting them talk about their problems and helping them find real help with their TBI or PTSD. And so I've actually had 5 soldiers come to me and talk to me about having severe PTSD and how they don't want to be on this earth anymore. And I feel like they are using, they're talking to John through me. And it's such an honor because I love the fact that they come to me before it. And I feel bad because I asked one wife, I was like, did you know what's going on? And she's like, this, he hasn't opened up. He just comes home. He drinks. That's all he's been doing. And she's like, now I understand why. And it's weird that they feel more comfortable talking to me about it, but I really think it's, and she said, she's like, it's like you're talking, they're talking to John. But something I really love about Special Forces Foundation is those guys, we can help them. And we're all about brain health and about making sure our broken soldiers are not a number, but that they are taken care of and that they're being helped. And it's continual help. It's not just, oh, we're going to send you to this and do this. But it's, we actually check in on them. We have professionals checking on them. And that's something I really am passionate about because the Army is really good at breaking our men down, and our families. And Special Forces Foundation has recognized that the families also need help, not just Gold Stars, but active duty, retired. We're really good at breaking. So we're trying to put the broken pieces together. And I really love that about them. So I do that. I'm on the board for the Legion Fund with Special Forces, with this 5th Special Forces Group. And I just do a bunch of other volunteer stuff with different things. So it's awesome.
Yeah, and just have your hands full being a mom.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah, no, they're awesome. My kids, I've been really blessed. I've seen so many Gold Star kids go down like a really sad path. I don't know how we're not on that path. but I think it's also because we really do believe and pray to God. And we pray to, and we talk to John in our prayers too. I was like, we can talk to Daddy. You can talk to Daddy anytime. So it's, we're open about our feelings. We talk about them a lot. And, running does help. It does. It's the so annoying, but like working out, we're really good at doing that. So it helps. And playing basketball, because that was Daddy's favorite thing to do, but they're good at it. I was like, you don't have to do this because Daddy did it. Do it because you want to, because he did it because he liked it, not because anything else. So
let's throw a shout out out there that Devin just crushed his last run and won. So.
He did. We signed up the day before and he won first place in his age for a 10K, a local 10K. I was like, dude, what?
Yeah. And then, hey, and then like you guys are sucking me into the Army 10 miler now. So I'll get this unofficial run group growing to get to run this 10 miler.
Fine. I know. With my best friend who used to date Carl, which is a long story. But so, and thank heavens for her, because if I had dated Carl, then John would never have dated me. Oh yeah.
Well, if you could give, it doesn't have to just be one, but if you could give advice to somebody who hasn't lived your story yet, and hopefully they won't, but if somebody was going to go through everything you went through, or somebody is living your story right now for everything you've been through, what would you tell them?
Grief is like a cha-cha. You go forwards and back. It's, you know, you take 2 steps forward, you're like, woohoo. And then you take a couple steps back. it's not, it's really just, it's every day can be different. Some days you're crushing the world, and then other days you just want to sleep in bed and cry and eat chocolate. And it's okay to do that. But then the next day you have to get up and cha-cha back forward. So it's definitely, it's like, it's a dance. And you never know when the bad days hit, but they do. And you just have to make sure it's one day and not 10. and honestly, get, you know, drink some water, put your running shoes on. You don't have to run, just walk. But it's definitely a process. And the most frustrating thing is people think that you're just over it. It's been 6 years, but it still feels like yesterday. I can still hear John's voice. I can still smell him, feel him. And everyone's grief timeline is different. So it's, and I talk to people, it could be 20 years later. I talked to other, I just spoke with a Vietnam veteran wife. Her husband was killed in action. And she's like, it's, and she's remarried now. She's like, I still love my first husband. I never stopped loving him. It's just a different love now. And it's, she's like, it still feels, she's like, my heart still hurts the same all the time when I think about him. And, you know, it's also, it makes her heart full because she was loved so much by him. And that's the same thing with me. John loved us fiercely. Like, he fiercely loved us. And that's something that makes, helps us go to sleep at night, because I know he loved us. And so it's just, like, seriously, just, it's a dance. Just keep dancing. And it's still hard. It just gets different. It's not easier. It's just a different grief the longer you go out. But it's still there. It's always there with you. So I guess that's it.
Well, I want to say thank you for being able to do this. And for anybody that does listen to this, let's ask them to say a prayer for the Farmer family, right? Keep all four of their kids and Tabitha in your thoughts and prayers.
And anyone who want to help us buy a house in Florida, that'd be great.
Yeah, we're going to. Yeah. I'll take you.
I'm just kidding. No, I'm not kidding. I'm at that wits end. I'm like, I'll take it. I'll take the help.
Yeah. I want to say thank you for doing this. Thank you for just talking about it. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to be able to meet you and give me the opportunity to run alongside you guys a month ago.
Little did you know that we were going to rope you in for more.
I'm in the club now. The club, yeah. All of the above. That's what it's
all
named.
All of the above.
All of the above. It's what we named. That's what you named it. But honestly, when I finally got to sit down with you guys, do the run, and then when we went to dinner, like, it was, I was super emotional, and I was super thankful for the opportunity to be able to sit with you, get to meet the kids, talk to them. And you, I know you have a big support group, but just so you know, like, we are here to help you with no matter what you need. And I truly mean that from the bottom of my heart. And it's like we talked about before we even kicked this off, is the one thing I always try to do is, no matter what organization I've been in, it's always try to remember the fallen, right? And the families. So I say that to say, like, we're always here to help you. You're also kind of stuck with us now because, like, we're unofficially, you know, on a running team. So,
yeah, we are.
but I just want to say thank you so much. Thank you for everything you're doing. And thank you for everything you have done.
Thank you. It's an honor. It's an honor that I don't wish upon anybody. And but also at the same time, I wear it with pride, because I'm so grateful to be John's wife and love, and he was simply the best. So, and now I've got four little replicas of him, different ways, completely different. So They're keeping me on my toes. So,
heck
but
yeah.
Thank you. And
well,
thank you for
you.
Everything that you do. I'm so happy that you're, you know, doing everything that you're doing. And you're still active duty. Like, what? No. That's amazing. So.
It is. But it's all about, at the end of the day, like, I'm coming to the end of my road, you know, in this journey. And my next one is, the easy button is to always just do what you've been doing, right? Contracting, keep deploying, keep, you know, we had some of these conversations, and but you have to realize, and it, just like Turnbull, right? When we talked about, like, you, there comes a point in time where you have to take your own advice, and the advice that we gave him was, like, you have to realize now that your mission's different.
Yeah.
And that's really, like, where, like, this name, like, derived from, is, like, everybody's going to have a difficult time, but as long as it's never going to define you, but what you do after it is what's really going to matter. And you have to be able to accept at some point that, like, your mission's different now. And I think what that's going to be for us, and, like, is helping people like you, and just helping people, because at the end of the day, you know, that's really what it's all about.
No, I just want to help give back, because I've had so much love and support, and it's awesome. And yeah. Being with Special Forces Foundation has been awesome, just to help give back a little bit, because it's hard. And I love the fact that people call and ask for help, because that's the hardest thing, is to ask for the help. Yeah. And even if we can't do it, we find a way. That's our way. We're Special Forces. We will find a way.
Heck yeah.
So awesome.
Well, thank you, Tabitha. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, yeah.